Hey guys, welcome to the Street Cop Podcast. I'm here with one of our best instructors, Shane Morgan. He teaches a course called Flipping Informants. How it's important to know to take those street level investigations to that next level and be able to work with confidential informants. You'll be surprised at the things you guys get. And going beyond the traffic stop, going beyond the small level narcotic seizure, and how to trade up and cash in later on. So without further ado, Shane Morgan. Hey buddy, how are you?
Hey Dennis, thanks for having me.
Yeah, he's a detective at a agency here in the state of New Jersey, but his program is universal throughout the country, and it's an important topic. When it came to me, he said, I want to teach this. I said, I'm very much interested. Let's see what you got. He's done a phenomenal job thus far with his program. So what made you come up with this idea that you were going to create a program, flipping informants, and why it's so important to law enforcement to understand how this is done? And we'll start at that.
Sure. So it's actually on a much smaller level, a program I developed probably 5 or 6 years ago, where as a way, maybe backtrack a little bit, I started the job 13 years ago as a patrolman, and I never had that connection with a local agency where I could maybe turn an informant over to someone. So when I ultimately became a detective, I recognized a gap where how can I go out and connect with the street cops that are out there in the best position to cultivate informants, and how can I bridge that gap now that I'm on the other side of this? So I began a small program. I go on midnight shifts at shift change, a roll call, and speak for 30, 45 minutes to street cops about what I'm learning, what you can see out there. Eventually, after doing it probably 30, 40 times, just became something where I just saw like, there's definitely more to this. And if I had the opportunity to speak to people for longer periods of time, who knows what we can accomplish together, you know? And like you said already, it's not something specific to New Jersey. This is nationwide. Learning how to talk to people, and then sometimes the most like critical moment in their lives at the point of arrest or the point of contact with police. How can I take this moment and flip it to the next bigger thing?
Do you think, let's start from the basics. Where does a patrolman start? So here's my example. You may have somebody who says, well, I've never flipped an informant. I've never tried to cultivate a confidential informant. To work with more detectives. Some people don't even have detective bureaus. Some people don't even have narcotics divisions.
Sure.
So where's the first step? Is it identifying somebody who you can turn this person on to?
I would say no. I would say the first step is, and I cover this in class, is, and there's a misconception where we wait for the detectives to be able to do this thing, right? But no, the first step, in my opinion, is at that moment of arrest. So click, click, the handcuffs are on, the dust is settled. Now, if we can de-escalate a situation and take an approach to someone, a more humanized approach to someone, get to know them, speak to them, I feel that that begins at the moment of the actual arrest. Or everything's not going to be an arrest. Sometimes it is a citizen contact. Maybe it's something out there on a neighborhood canvas. Maybe you're dealing with a victim of a crime that can do other things, or a witness of a crime. There are other points of police contact where it can begin, where it doesn't always have to be this thing we see in the movies where, hey, we got you with a kilo. Now you have to work for us. It's not like that at all.
So tell us more about that. So we're still going to have to flip it up to somebody. So, you know, should we reach out? If we don't have somebody locally in our agency, should we reach out to another agency or a next step up to be a county agency or a state agency? You want to have somebody to be able to turn these people on to, correct?
Definitely. And I would say if you feel like you're not getting things reciprocated to, like maybe you reached out to someone, but then they're not reaching out to you and saying, hey, why don't you, Patrolman Smith, why don't you come out with us on the buys? Or, hey, you know what? Because of the information you gave us, we were able to turn it into this big investigation. If you feel like the information is one-sided, don't feel like you only have to go to that person. You know, if there's plenty of task forces out there. And I get this question a lot on the group is, I just don't have that connection in the Facebook group. I don't have that connection with someone. And I just say, find that person that's going to reciprocate what you give them that will help you bring you to your next level, help you sharpen your skills investigatively. And it's going to be a relationship, a back and forth. Any good street cops out there that have a connection with a local task force, county, state, even federal, we all know the alphabet soup, right? Every federal agency out there, FBI, ATF, DEA, HSI, they're all out there, and their task forces in some regions have a stronger hold, and other regions might be one agency or another, but find that agency that works for you and works for your department.
Yes, you get to poke around a little bit. You're going to have to make some phone calls and say, hi, this is Patrolman so-and-so. I work at this agency.
Sure.
We don't currently have a narcotics division, and I've been getting better at finding drug arrests. I'd like to be able to turn these people from just being arrestees to confidential informants. And do you have somebody that I could speak with? Maybe start there.
Sure.
That makes sense.
Absolutely. And also, don't limit yourself to just narcotics. There's that. There's another misconception where it's just CIs are just for narcotics, but there is so much valuable intelligence out there where there are informants that may be able to help your guide your hand on a burglary investigation. Or we call these people the whisperers out there on the street. They're in a position to hear and see the things that we're never going to see in uniform or as street cops, right? So having that ability to have them whisper in your ear some of these things where they may not be a witness to the crime, but maybe you were in that house where other people were shooting up drugs and they overheard who's doing these crimes. Don't limit yourself to just drugs. Human trafficking, which I've heard from you personally in your classes, what better than to save a child from being abused, right? Homicides. When a homicide occurs, what's the first thing that'll happen? Street cops will get on the phone with the little birds in the area. What did you see? What did you hear? Right? Don't limit yourself to just drugs, but absolutely.
That's really good advice. Why aren't some people incentivized to work with the police? Like, why would somebody be incentivized? Let's go over the person who's arrested and the person who's not arrested. And what are some motivations behind why they would work with it? And then also, I'm going to follow that up with not only who are those people, what's the credibility as a court system? How do you establish credibility with a confidential informant?
So to answer the first question, I tell people to question their motivation. So there's a bunch of motivations, probably not enough time to cover in this podcast. But to boil it down to just a few, obviously the one everybody thinks of is the defendant, the person that's in custody. And the gold pot at the end of that rainbow for them is to begin to work with you and see the time maybe worked off their sentence. Now, there's two ways that happen. Sometimes people will do that before they obtain an attorney. And then there's times when they obtain an attorney and they go through an agreement with your local district attorney, your local prosecutor, where something's in black and white. If you give us this much time, give us this kind of case, we'll take this much time off of your sentence, right? And they can work that back. So that's probably the majority of the way many people start as informants. Some other incentives, and I don't want to give any trade secrets here, but some people, and I've covered this in the Facebook group before, think about people that are the revenge informant, right? That maybe it's the rival gang member or the rival criminal that wants to drop a dime on another drug set, another organization, could be a whisper, could be a phone call. When this is happening, when that is happening, to see someone else's demise, to strengthen the run. Now, I'm not saying that this is the best case, but there are motivations, the incentives for people, that could be a major incentive is revenge. And we need to be, I covered this in class, got to be super careful of revenge because it can help have people seeing red, and there's a lot of red flags to go with that. There's levels of informants, but there's obviously your people in the neighborhood that are concerned maybe about, we talk about concerned citizens, but these are people that may let you park in their driveways, access their surveillance cameras. Their incentive is going to be to see you clean up their neighborhood. So they're going to tell you, hey, this car, this rental car that keeps stopping in front of my neighbor's house 2-3 times a week, here's the tag. Here's what the description of the person in the house, description of the people in the car, could be an incentive for them to help see their neighborhood cleaned up.
Do you think some people just generally like to help the police and they get a kind of a thrill out of watching the police do the work and get people in trouble?
You know what, Dennis? A very slim amount of people, but it's almost funny because we all get on this job basically for the same reasons. You know, we all obviously help people. I think these people have been discounted and discredited their entire lives, that eventually once they're not working for us as far as a paycheck, they're not working for us wearing uniform, but eventually they start to feel good too, because they're doing something good for their community. Mm-hmm. So it could be somebody that's in custody, like I said, like a defendant informant, but eventually that does take to them where they start to feel good about the things they're doing. Very slim amount of people. Not everybody feels like they're working for the flag like that, but it does happen. And in the class, I share the picture of the Norman Rockwell painting of the little kid looking up at the police officer at the bar stool, right in the diner. It's just that image where they look up to the police at some point. They might have a really bad family structure. They could have been arrested 30, 40 times before you have that conversation with them. Now you're treating them with respect. They feel like they're doing well. And it's definitely, that's an attitude they could definitely take on.
Is everyone a good CI? Do they start out good? Do they end up bad? Tell me about that a little bit.
No. So one of the first slides I show is the golden rule of informant management, right? And it's been beat. Any narc in probably the United States has heard this saying, today's CI is tomorrow's target. So to answer that question, treat every CI like you are going to be targeting them tomorrow, because you never, ever know when they could flip. They're a CI. So if they're a CI for you today, what's their motivation to go back to the street? So to say that their nature, I will never trust a CI, I may find their information to be credible. And I meant to answer that question for you earlier, but there is a level of credibility that they can obtain after they start to achieve certain cases or you corroborate the things they tell you. But definitely always question them and never, ever stop questioning them. You know, I have spoken to people who have had informants for 20 plus years and I see them handle them and they treat them the same way now that they did back then. They might have a professional relationship. At the end of the day, you're the police and they're the CI. And if a quick Google search will show you where that those lines have been blurred over the years, and that can be very dangerous. Today's CI is tomorrow's target for sure.
Think about the Whitey Bulger stuff, is him being the CI and getting the free pass from that FBI agent who's now doing life in prison as well, right?
Sure, yes. Was on the run for years because the FBI handler had tipped them off.
Mm-hmm. What's the best way to start a communication? And can anybody start to work with that? Like, you know, when does a police officer step in and what's some of the line or language you would use when you'd want to start trying to cultivate somebody? Maybe some things you should look for in somebody to see. I mean, I think I would ask everybody, I can recall and ask everybody like, hey, you are in a predicament at this point. Just understand that we do have narcotics detectives here or detectives in general, that if you had valuable information could benefit you in your current charges. I would say things like that. You know, listen, doesn't mean you have to. It's just that I want to put that out there for you, that there's an option along those lines. How else would you word it?
Sometimes it's not just the wording, but it's the way you say it, right? So taking yourself out of that uniform, not actually, but like removing, you say it in your class, people are going to judge a police off of an interaction from a traffic stop or that arrest for the rest of their lives. So they already have an idea in their head what the police are supposed to be like, or maybe what they heard from a friend before you even walk in the door.
I'm gonna pick up where we left off in a second.
Sure.
We had a little technical difficulty before, but let's pick up where we left off just before. We are doing this via Zoom and we had a little technical issue. But back to what we were saying regarding the language we're using to picking somebody or trying to communicate to somebody about becoming a CI. What's the appropriate approach?
So the appropriate approach would be, and this is different things for different people. I've said this before. What may work for Dennis Benigno isn't going to always work for Shane Morgan, right? My approach has always been to try to remove myself, not physically, but as far as in their mindset, remove myself from the normal police they're used to dealing with. So what are they used to dealing with? Maybe the RoboCop mindset or someone that treats them like they are the drug addict. They are the person that's been arrested so many times. What value could they have, right? So I try as hard as I can to go in and treat them as a person, not as a thing, right? So speaking to them like a human being, that a lot of times you will see a reaction for them like, okay, this is the normal police. And I've seen it just as a testament to this. It's not always the people in the jeans and the t-shirts. I've seen people in full uniform do the same thing that I can do. It is not reserved just for the narcs, right? Just taking that attitude. Now, just to clarify, and I know I said it earlier, this is not on the side of the road. When someone is still in their car, this is after an arrest, after you've had that contact with them, where you now have control over the situation. Maybe you're at the back of the police department. You're in the, in the back of a patrol car, having a conversation with them. This is not a safety thing. This is when I say to remove yourself from the uniform, right? So treating them like a human being, treating them with respect and, starting to maybe throw some incentives out there for them. Like, hey, I don't know if you know this or not, but people who work with the police generally see success with their charges. And it's not always something that you think about in the movies or you see in the movies. Do you have an idea what I'm talking about? Like, oh yeah, that people say, you want me to testify? Like, no, I actually don't want you to testify. I'll tell you what, we assign you a number. We don't release your gender. We don't even release the date you do things or the amount of the drug you bought, right? And this will be different for many states, but it's pretty common across the United States, right? You're basically just going to put me in a better position for our investigations, right? I'm going to go to great lengths to hide you to the point where if you ever did have to testify, I would make sure that case is dismissed. And
you're the case.
Sure. And that's normally when people will say, and not all the time, but you'll get that, well, I've seen my name in discovery before. I've seen a friend's name in discovery before. Y'all burnt so-and-so, you know, your Albert and Uncle Den, you know, I saw it in Discovery on Facebook, right? It's not the case. So whenever someone says that, I'll say, can you show that to me? If they can locate it or they'll describe it to me, it's normally when someone's a witness to a crime and they give a statement to the police and that's put in Discovery. Obviously, that's going to be Discovery that's accessible to the defendant. So when people say that to you or describe that to you, that's when your opportunity to flip the script and say, that's right, but that's not what I'm asking you to do. You're not a witness to a crime. I'm asking to be an informant, basically. There's a big problem with that, though. People have an idea what they think you want them to do in their head. They want you to wear a wire to go out there and infiltrate organizations. No, round peg, round hole. I'm not going to ask you to do anything you haven't done before. I'm not asking you to go infiltrate a blood set or, you know, this or the Pagans. I'm asking you to deal with the same people you've dealt with before. Maybe give me information just put us in that position investigatively.
Yeah, it's real cool. I mean, I think there's a lot of missed opportunities in law enforcement. People not knowing to do that. That doesn't mean nobody told me in the academy, hey, if you make an arrest, there's something. I mean, can we apply this for almost every arrest?
To speak to people?
Try to cultivate a CI. I mean, there are times where, and again, there are some things that we can't, they call it guideline 12 here. Is that correct?
Factor 12, yep.
Yeah, any situation we go into, there are certain things that we cannot cultivate CIs out of. You can't get guideline 12 domestic violence.
Nope.
Certain things that can't be done under guideline 12. Is that correct?
Sure. Think about victims, right? So if someone just did an armed robbery at a convenience store and someone just, there's a victim of that, right? Obviously, that's not something that you're even want to give them credit for on their charges, a homicide. So where the state's the victim, things like that, where we can start to help them out. Absolutely. Now, that doesn't mean we won't hear them out as they're sitting on the bench, but obviously we cannot sign these people up as confidential informants.
Okay, to be moments in time, but you'd be surprised how much more opportunity there is. I mean, we had people flipping over speeding tickets.
Sure.
We had people who had speeding tickets who were like, I need to get rid of this ticket, how do I fix it? We had a guy give him a crack team up for a 4-point ticket that he got from another agency, and they worked with us to roll this guy. We ripped the house and wow. I'm telling you, they're literally going to work and give information in Dubai to work up a 4-point speeding ticket.
Sure.
Now, let me just all say this. This is not incentive for me to tell you to go out and start hammering tickets out, trying to cultivate CIs. These are people who knew how the game worked, were CIs before, and then received a summons in another jurisdiction, and then came to our jurisdiction and said, I need to get rid of this ticket. I have information. And we were at the guideline 12 of that ticket. I mean, that's probably the easiest guideline 12 that ever. I mean, what we do, we tore down a whole crack organization over a 4-point ticket.
Sure. Sometimes they'll seek you out. I said this in a video on the group last week, is that sometimes people will actually walk into your department because if they have someone, and as I said earlier, maybe you're a revenge informant or their incentive is they have an axe to grind with someone. They will go knock on your department door, walk in, talk to dispatch. It doesn't happen frequently, but it will happen. When they want to seek out the police, they will find you and they will try to approach you about working.
What do you think about us making it aware to the public that something like this is available? If you have tips, then please reach out to the hotline. How do those work?
From what I've heard, they're hit or miss. It's definitely could get the people that maybe the neighbor that allowed house parties, that kind of thing, or you sift through them and you can ultimately see like the good information. And you could tell, I'm sure when it is the really good information, when it is that person, that's the revenge. Because if they Google, you know, police tips and put it in there, if there's some really specific information in there, I have to question about how close that person is to the suspect, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of legalities involved in this, which essentially as a patrolman or somebody who's, I don't want to say enticing, but at least making the offer to sign somebody up, you're going to essentially put the offer out in the hand of somebody else. Your investigators have to be very familiar with the case law regarding sources of information, veracity, corroboration, all that stuff. Not really. Also, if you're a police officer, patrolman, or somebody who doesn't deal with the next level investigation, first of all, don't discount your importance. Don't think you have to be one of those to be considered important. But everybody has specific jobs. Your job is to at least express to folks, hey, I see that you're in this predicament. There are options. Here are some of the options. And you're not the first person that ever did it, and it helped a lot of people out in the past. And certainly it may be a good option for you. If you'd like to speak to somebody, I do have somebody here that would come back here and talk to you a little bit. I got to tell you, as I'm thinking about it, I would say 75% of the people that I arrested would actually work with us. We had I did a very short run of narcotics. I mean, essentially, also calling those people proactively. Going, you were, she's getting her cell phone numbers saying, hey, this is Detective Benino. How are you? I'm the narcotics division here. I see that this happened. You got called with this. Okay. You know, it's not that big of a deal. I'm sure you're dealing with a lot of stuff on the back end of things, but I want you to know that if you would like to come in and speak with us a little bit, we are able to do things to get your charges downgraded or dismissed if the information you have is. And it's so funny because nobody gives you a good dealer first. They refer for a shitty dealer.
Bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, but the worst kind of the person they hate, you got to can't stand. We know that. We know that we're starting off with that's what it's going to be. Some people didn't know what to do. They just were completely misunderstanding what they were supposed to do. So I think good communication. But again, if we're talking to the overall general, first level, or first line patrolman, supervision even, look, our job is to just let them know that it's there. Is that a fair statement?
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's an option. Here's a number to call. If you, no, I don't want to do it right now. Look, here's a number you can call. Dial this extension when you call this number. If you change your mind, they will be willing to listen to you. I know you're saying no now, which is fine. But later on, if you change your mind, don't think that the line is not open.
Sure.
A lot of people call them a day or two later. Again, with their attorney 2 weeks later. Hey, Joe wants to work with you. This is Pete, the attorney. My client, Joe so-and-so, has these charges. He has agreed to. I've had people bring their kids in, mm-hmm. right? You got adult children coming with their parents. Joey wants to work with you guys. I told him he's going to, right?
Sure. So,
you'd be surprised.
Absolutely.
How about who do you think some of your best confidential informants are? How about prostitutes?
Prostitutes that could be working off a charge. It's kind of tough. If you close your eyes and picture what an informant might look like, it's tough to actually say, you know, who the best one is, because you can't judge a book by its cover kind of thing. And some of the mm-hmm. best informants that I've heard of are the people you would never imagine, you know, or even some of the best cases could come out of that walk-in. So it's tough to say who the best are, but I would say it never hurts to ask anybody. And don't, if it's a prostitute or a high-level drug dealer, don't stop yourself from asking that person. Don't feel like, oh, they'll never want to work with me. They'll never want to talk to the police, because some of the biggest, baddest people out there will actually talk to the police. Like you said, 75% is probably, you're going to get something out of everyone. And when you have that contact with them, and I said earlier, today's CI is tomorrow's target, but most people, especially that 75% on that initial contact, will tell you they want to work with you. So I tell people, treat that opportunity as like it's the first and the last time you're ever going to speak to this person again.
Yeah.
So do a full-blown debrief. And once again, it's not something just for people that in the detective bureau. If you're a street cop and you have the luxury of time to be able to sit down and talk to someone, do that full-blown debrief with these people, because the chances are stacked against you that they will actually answer the phone the next day.
Correct.
Everybody wants to talk to you when they think that they can get themselves out of handcuffs. But if they go through the full-blown debrief, who knows? If they fall off and now you have information about a trap house with surveillance cameras, you know, maybe there's a gun in there, maybe someone that's riding around with a gun, they'll tell you about them that day. But how mm-hmm. great is that for officer safety, which is the end of the day is the biggest win out of everything.
Yeah, it's true. You try to get as much information as you can at that time. Finish up that interview that you're going to give the front level trauma, and, you know, understand that what the rules are, whether they are their arrest. And if that conversation is not going to be used against them in a court of law, you can advise them of that. You only have to advise Miranda, and again, I'm not trying to get your SOP details. I'm going off strictly of case law.
Sure.
You only have to advise Miranda if you're going to use it against them in a court of law. You know, this stuff doesn't have to be included in their discovery if they decide to give additional statements or information regarding other crimes that they're aware of going on. You don't have to include that in your report. I didn't spoke to Joe so-and-so. He told me about this. No, mm-hmm. that's not how it works. You know, let your detective bureau handle that.
If you did put that in writing and that did hit the street, your credibility now is shot, because everyone's going to know that that Officer Dennis is out there burning people. He's going to ask you things, and the next thing you know, your name's going to be there in black and white on Facebook, right? The word will hit the street faster than you know it. So I advise against that severely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So this is all really good advice. And, you know, as we continue to progress in law enforcement, especially through this training company, we are really uncovering all these people who have a lot to offer, where we can have larger law enforcement objectives completed. And something as simple as talking to somebody after an arrest would be, you know, not sounding melted, trying to humanize yourself and line yourself up on the same playing ground and give them the respect that they deserve, and really trying to communicate to them that you're trying to help them. This is an option. You empathize with their situation. You did not choose to end up being here. It just kind of happened that way. But it doesn't mean that all options are exhausted at this point. We had a guy, oh man, we had a lot of good ones. I'm not going to go into too many details, but we had people who were halfway down the line who had pled guilty and were pending sentencing who started to work and then got their sentences reversed.
Sure.
I mean, we had one guy go to prison for quite a few years, gave us information, we were able to do something real cool. And he was actually got his conviction vacated from a judge before the day before he'd report into state prison.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, he was thrilled. But we got a big job out of it. We had, there was a lot of kilos coming to that one.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I don't want to go too many details. It was a long time ago. I'm sure. But yeah, he got commuted by the judge for doing that big of a work. I mean, really turned us on to something really big.
Wow. That's great. And there's so many stories out there like that across the whole country, just taking the time to talk to these people. And if they are in between a rock and a hard place, maybe they're not cooperative that first day. You never know when that phone call is going to come for the attorney, or the sentencing comes around and then they have a come to God moment. And all right, you know what? It changed my mind. I don't want to, you know, miss these birthdays again, these Christmases, you know, with a family. I don't want to see my kids be 10 years older when I come out. So what do I have to do to help myself out?
Great stuff. Shane, I don't really have much more to think for as much as we could cover on a public forum.
Sure.
We've covered the ground that we need to cover and give information to the people out there. Listen, obviously at all times, there are going to be naysayers to the kind of work that we're trying to do, but this is God's work. Some of the information coming across from the CI, I'd say, people who are, I guess, in some sense, anti-police. Mm-hmm. What if it was information that revealed that somebody was trafficking children around? Are you okay with that too? Because not every single time it's going to come out and be a drug case, a gun case. What if it is a gun case and a gun that was taken off the street was the gun that would have been used to kill your brother-in-law at an armed robbery? But you'll never know that. We can never measure the impact we have. There's no way we have to do when we go out and do those things. So I want to remind everybody that as simple as it may sound, as much you may snicker at advice like this, the large-scale impact of understanding this is another tool that you have in your toolbox as a law enforcement officer is tremendous when it comes to societal return on the investment of training. So now that you're aware of this, don't be afraid to use it. Go out and employ it. Do you have anything else before we finish, Shane?
No, you just kind of touched on something, though. You mentioned earlier the traffic ticket. And that hypothetical person didn't start with a traffic ticket. Maybe they worked with you before. When you treat these people with respect and they have success working with you, if they get the outcome that they wanted, depending on what their incentive is, you basically have a friend for lifetime. It's probably not the last time they're going to be arrested. Maybe not the last time they need something. They maybe need help from the police, minutes for their phone, warrant problems, whatever. So whose phone do you think is now going to ring for the rest of your career? Work to the point where the really good narcs or the really good detectives or patrolmen, because many places across the country, you're working investigations as a patrolman, you're passing these numbers off for people as you retire, because they've contacted you for the rest of your career. So absolutely. Treat people with respect, get, you know, employ these tactics and the sky truly is the limit.
Yeah. It's interesting that the behavior of the police officer, the professionals and the respect, the humanity behind all of this really is the core of all good police work, isn't it?
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. The best cops are the kindest ones and who can express and communicate correctly to everybody else. If you're somebody who has a tough time communicating, it is not hard to work on yourself and learn how to communicate better. I tell people I have a hard time talking to them like you talk to your friends.
Sure.
There's no difference. I mean, I'm not telling you to be unsafe, but you know, talk to them like you're drinking a beer with those guys. You're shooting the shit. You could digress a little bit from the uniform and try to express some human characteristics to try to get them to work with you. But again, for the naysayers out there, say what you want. Some of the best recoveries of people and narcotics and drugs and money laundering, you name it, where maybe somebody close to you was a victim, have been recovered through the work of confidential informants.
Absolutely.
Without further ado, this was Shane Morgan. He teaches a class called Flipping Informants. You can find it at StreetCop.com. check our group out, Street Cop Training New Group on Facebook. We also have Instagram. We're at 50,000 followers as of today. Today is, as we're recording, July 6th. And we have the Street Cop Conference coming up October 4th through the 8th. Going to be a really, really stellar performance. Really great things going on there. Have a great day, everybody. We care about you tremendously. I know it's hard, and at times it's a very noisy world, but the world needs you to show up. But it's depending on you, and you said you would show up. So show up. See you, Shane.
Thanks, Dennis.